Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Welcome, friends, to another hour with me, Carolyn Yeager. Tonight, as promised, I have another great guest who happens to also be a German speaker. Günter Deckert is a hearty German nationalist from Heidelberg, area of Baden-Württemberg, a famously picturesque area which is on the western side of Germany, along the Rhine and Neckar rivers. He has been cruelly persecuted by the post-war Orthodox establishment for his political views. He was first driven out of the educational establishment, where he was an outstanding teacher. He garnered many awards and recognitions for his commitment to his students and his creative approaches to teaching. And he was driven out because he had joined the National Democratic Party of Germany. After adjusting to that loss of his teaching career in 1988, he opened a travel agency and in order to be independent, and he was then elected national leader of the NPD and served from 1991 to 1996. The NPD is the National Democratic Party of Germany, a truly nationalist party, as many of you know. He was put through several political criminal trials during these years, and in April 1995, Günter Deckert was sentenced to 2 years in prison without probation for, I won't try to pronounce the German wording for this, but it is translated as dangerous political incendiarism. Now, what was this dangerous activity? It was translating what the American Fred Leuchter was saying to an audience that had been gathered to hear him speak about his report on the alleged gas chamber facilities at the wartime concentration camps. Most of you are probably familiar with the Fred Leuchter report. Repeating Fred Leuchter's words at this meeting was considered dangerous incendiarism in Germany. And this is not all. While he was in prison, he wrote a letter to the president of the Central Council of Jews, which is Germany's most powerful Jewish organization, and this letter was published in the NPD's party newspaper. Günter was then charged with incendiarism again, and at a trial in Mannheim, he was sentenced to 2 years, 3 months additional time. It was not until 1999, unless it was possibly 2000, that he was released from prison. After that, his lawyer, Ludwig Bach, was fined 9,000 Deutschmarks in 1999 for statements he made during the trials in defense of his client. I think we are all familiar with this type of justice happening to others. I want you to understand that what happened later to Germar Rudolf, Ernst Zundel, Sylvia Stoltz, Horst Mahler, and many less famous heretics had already happened to my guest, and I'm proud to call him my friend also, Günter Deckert. Well, Günter, I cannot do justice to your inspiring career with my introduction, but I know you can fill us in with what you think is important. Welcome to the Heretics Hour. Good evening to you. And how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm fine. Spring is coming and we have got a very warm day. Typical April weather. Rain, sunshine, and very, very warm for the season. Up to 20 degrees Celsius.
Günter, there is so much to talk about with you. And I was just recently studying up on something that has taken place in Germany this past week. A big brouhaha about a man named Hermann Dierkes, who is a member of the Left Party, and the trouble that he's gotten into. I thought you might be able to shed some light on that for us. Also, because I was going to ask you about the various political parties in Germany, and I had looked them up about this story, and there's quite a slew of them, but there are a few that are the main parties. what can you tell us about the political scene and the political parties in Germany today, currently?
Well, you may say you've got the mainstream parties, or what we call the establishment parties, to which belongs the Left Party as well. It is the later Communist Party of Central Germany. And concerning certain topics or political issues, you've got the same solutions, the same reasoning. But from time to time, the left wingers is not as monophon, is not an entity as are the so-called real establishment parties. And it happens due to the different, let's say, streams of togetherness. The left party is a combination of the former Communist Party of Central Germany and, let's say, old communists, Trotskyists, Stalinists and Maoists of the western part of Germany. And this Dierke doesn't come from the old central part of the Communist Party, but is a member or is a product of the communist streams in the western part of Germany. And that explains his being different from what Berlin, the party leaders of the left party, want to be said about the Palestine question, above all here, the bombardment of gas of the Gaza Strip.
Now there's a lot of detail about the inner party workings that we wouldn't be aware of. Yes, so Dierke has made some statements pro-Palestinian, and even mentioned the Holocaust in the sense of it should not be used as an excuse. This is my wording for the Israelis to persecute the Palestinians. And the government of Germany should not be using it, allowing it to be used as an excuse. And
yes.
Certain things like this. And, well, of course, this just created all hell breaking loose.
Is any comparison between what the Jews pretend to have suffered a long time ago and the now suffering of the Arabs in the Gaza Strip, or let's say in the eastern part of Palestine, isn't, let's say, not tolerated in the smaller Germany of today, which always called them a democratic state. There is a kind of, you can say, intellectual climate that reminds you of the Middle Ages, when the Catholic Church always had the last saying, and those who didn't agree had, well, were led to the stake to be burned. And that is the situation here. And Dierke, who is only a local councillor in the big fluvial port of Duisburg, that's in the Rhinelands, north of Cologne, well, got nationwide and even worldwide, let's say, reputation by leading the mainstream opinion concerning the relations between the Germany of today and Israel on one side, and the thought and the fate of the Arabs at the Gaza Strip on the other side. And he is in favor of an independent Palestinian state. And any comparison, not taking into account the special fate of the Jews and the special relation between the Germany of today and Israel, is, well, a kind of crime. And those people are regarded as criminals. They had to be fought. They had to be eliminated from political life.
Well, now, Hermann Dierke must have known this, and yet what strikes me from this, and I may be wrong, that I see that in spite of the fact that he is on the left, as far on the left as he is an honorable man, and he tries to live according to what he believes, and therefore he speaks out. But he must know that it's not acceptable, and do you think that he was aware that it would go so bad for him that he would be kicked out of the party? And he's also stopped his election campaign for mayor of the town that he lives
normally,
in.
Normally, people on the left side of the, let's say, the parties do not realize that they may get into trouble if they try to compare, let's say, historical or political events. And they are normally surprised at the reaction of the mainstream media and, let's say, the established parties. I don't know if he was aware of the fact that his position concerning the Gaza Strip situation of today would lead him into such a situation, even with a threat of being prosecuted and being, let's say, brought before a court. And in this context, or in this situation, an edict, well, a judgment to his negative point is possible. That is, well, the situation of Germany of today.
Do you think it's possible that he would be prosecuted for his remarks?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
At least there will be a prosecution to calm down a stirred up situation. The Jews always, well, worldwide, complain, attack. And it's reaction of fighting back of the system to get into a prosecution process to show to the Jews and the world outside we are totally against anti-Semitic tendencies and do everything to fight back, to eliminate people and to eliminate tendencies which might be a threat to the Jewish cause in Germany or the state of Israel.
See, one of the conservative newspaper editorialists called Derkay's remarks careless Nazi utterances, and another politician used the word Nazi. And here this man is a communist. This is really, in a sense, hilarious, that even when you're that far on the left, if you say the wrong things, you're going to be called a Nazi.
Nazi is the synonym of the evil things possible. There's nothing more evil than to being called a Nazi. Nazi is what you call in German ein Totschlagargument, an argument to kill people. And if I say Nazi, there's no discussion possible. You are a kind of outcast, an outlaw. You must be eliminated because Nazism stands for, well, evil, 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 evil.
Yes. You know, I have a question to ask you. It says in this one article that Stephen J. Kramer, who is the Secretary General of the Central Council of Jews, which in Germany, which is, to my understanding, the most powerful Jewish organization in Germany, has 106,000 members. And when you think, I think, what a small number for in a nation of, what is Germany now, 60 million, or is it larger than that? Or maybe it's, huh? 80 million. And 106,000 in this...
75 million Germans, and the rest are foreigners.
Okay. Well, that's not too bad, considered what it is here. There are people who, Germans, who try to tell me that the Jews are not that powerful in Germany. And I think they mean because the numbers are small. How does this small number group...
As to the Jews, well, they're not an entity. You've got, let's say, Jews from the former Soviet Union. You have Jews from the Southeast, Jews from everywhere. And the so-called Zentralrat, the Central Committee of the Jews living in Germany, not German Jews or Jewish Germans, very different. The Jews living in or the on German soil, well, is not important as to the number of its members, not important, let's say, to the economic influence they had, well, in about the primary, not important as being influential in science or yours, but it's an importance only based on history, and the special history everybody knows of. That is a moral importance.
Yes. That brings to mind something that I read recently in a book by, is it Raquel? No, Dagmar Barno. That the current terminology, this book is a few years old, in Germany, officially, is that you call Germans by the terms of non-Jewish Germans and Jewish Germans. That there's no, you know, you're either a Jewish German or you're termed a non-Jewish German. Is that correct?
The official, let's say, expression, or it's what they is, Jew in Germany. Sometimes people say Jews are, Jewry is only a region. which is imposed by the Jews themselves. Jews, by some, are called a race. For example, Salzia Landmann, a Jew from the Ukraine. Typically, is the Jews here in Germany may be pass holders of the German state of today, but they don't feel as Germans. If there are any, it's a rare exception. And you mentioned a certain Stefan Kramer.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a Jew. He's a real German of blood who converted to Jew, to become a Jew. It's interesting. This Kramer is not a Jew by birth. He's a Jew by converting.
When did he do that?
A couple of years ago.
Well, why would he do that? Didn't he say?
Yes, a couple of years ago, 10 years ago. Kramer was a leading boy in the Springer media. And Springer is a known friend of Israel. He's got special rules for his people working for him that Israel should never be attacked in his papers. The most known ones are the Bild, which is a tabloid, every day, Bild, about 2 million copies a day, central one, and the Welt, the Bird, which is a leading conservative paper issued in Berlin and Hamburg. And Kramer came from, let's say, the Springer firm, as we call them.
Oh. So is he kind of set up? Was he kind of set up to be the... Or how did he get to be the head of the Central Council of Jews?
Yes, because he converted.
Okay. All right.
Yes. Is it possible?
Well,
in rare exceptions, the Jews even accept non-Jewish people in the Rama Israel.
Yes. Okay. Well, it just goes to show what a confusing situation it is. Well, Gunter, let's change the subject onto your own life now. I have my first question I want to ask you is that I read that you are the first one who used the term "holo" for Holocaust. Is that true?
Yeah, about 15 years ago. Every year in my hometown, Weinheim near Heidelberg, as you mentioned it, we had in the autumn a kind of political weekend, a serving course, a real history, or things like that. And we had invited David Irving. I think it was in 92. And for the first time, this meeting had been forbidden by the local authorities. And there were a lot of police, more than 100 policemen there to make sure that we couldn't enter the public meeting house. And then outside, I said for the first time, we Germans have got a new saint. It's Saint Olo. I'm creating Holocaust into Olo. And it was before the cameras of some TV stations, and I was never charged for that. Maybe I might be charged now, but if I say Saint Olo, only shows that it's a kind of myth, that is, well, something not real. It's part of religion. And so far, I think I'm on the... still on the sure side and will not be prosecuted for speaking. And even nowadays in reports or in letters to editor, I only write HOLO. As a short form, I was never prosecuted for that. Up to the present, I must say. But things may change. You never know here in Germany.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's very interesting, I must say.
Apart from that, HOLO or the Holocaust is now more and more replaced by the Jew term of Shoah, as used in France.
Yes.
Holocaust, which came into existence by the Spielberg film of the same, well, Holocaust in the 70s, well, is more and more replaced by the Jewish term Shoah.
It may replace it altogether eventually. I could see that happening. All right. Now, your nationalism. This is a obvious question, but were you always a nationalist, or did you become a nationalist, or how did you become such a fervent nationalist?
Being a schoolboy, I was very, very interested in history and geography. Apart from Latin and sports, and well, English was not very interesting in my younger times. I read historic books like criminal books or even Wild West books, let's say, or frontier books concerning the American history, cowboys and rangers against the Indians. And then I realized what had happened to Germany, to my mother country, during the last 100 years. And I studied more and more German history, and, well, from reading and maybe innate instinct, I became what you call now as a greater German. I want to see that all the Germans in Central Europe might or that could live or are allowed to live in one state, being a central power as used to be the old Reich of the Middle Ages, which was the axis of Europe. And when I was a student at Heidelberg, I was not only confronted with the American presence, American soldiers at Mannheim and Heidelberg, important barracks there, and it was the time in the early 60s when the first foreigners came as foreign workers into the German industry in the Rhine-Main area. You know, Mannheim got Mercedes-Benz, a very important industry, second biggest port, fluvial port of Germany. And sometimes in Mannheim or Heidelberg, at certain places nowadays, and even in the last century, you have got the feeling, the idea, or the impression that you are not anymore in Germany, but abroad. You remember when we were at Mannheim railway station, more foreigners than the normal Germans to be seen. And that is why I saw the only answer to that problem, delusion. Germany should stay German and making front against a foreign invasion. It's not the problem of foreign people coming here as students. They are welcome. As tourists like you did, you are welcome. If they leave, and as long as they're here, they behave well, they pay their bills, and they don't commit crimes. And even as a nationalist, I'm interested in, let's say, international exchange of ideas, customs, and culture. But as a nationalist, I want that Germany stays a German state and not an exotic one on the former German soil.
Well, based on that, what are your views about the European Union?
European Union, is only good. Well, I must say, I studied that problem in the 70s of last century, being a young teacher. I came across the Treaty of Rome in 1958 and come into existence on the 1st January in 1959. It was a kind of invasion door into the national entities of Europe, be it France, be it Denmark, be it Austria, be it Germany. And it was only to the advantage of what we call the capitalists. That it means free trade, free financing, and free entrance to the members of the so-called community states. But there are a lot of Germans going south or west or east. We were, apart from France, due to our social system, our social security, a kind of a bait for those foreigners to get into Germany, to get into Central Europe, and to live on our expenses. And with that, the forming of ghettos in the big industrial cities like Frankfurt on the Main, or let's say in the other cities in the Ruhrgebiet, the industrial heart of the former Germany, or in, let's say, Munich area, the Nuremberg area, where more foreigners come, and in some suburbs or parts of the big cities, you're in Germany, you aren't in Germany anymore. You mean you are in a Balkan town? You've got the idea that you are in an Arab town or in a Turkish town?
Yes, okay. Well, Gunter,
identity.
Yes. All right. You know what? We've already used up our first half of our program, and so we're going to take a break now. We take a break for a few minutes of news, and we will be right back to continue.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tebbit. It's 7 years to the day since the US and its allies launched their invasion of Iraq. Hailed initially as a decisive coalition victory, that view was quickly dispelled as insurgency spread, and some estimates put the total civilian death toll since 2003 in the hundreds of thousands. Although US forces are now talking about leaving the country, unrest there remains a grim reality. From Baghdad, RT's Sean Thomas reports.
7 years after United States forces invaded Iraq on the premise of finding weapons of mass destruction and toppling the famed dictator Saddam Hussein, critics of the war are calling Operation Iraqi Freedom a failure.
Basically, in Iraq today, an entire nation that is really suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, how could they not be? After just the continually having to live, you know, in an occupation where war is surrounding you, where you or your family have known somebody or a member of your family has been killed.
The U.S.-led invasion has come at a high price, with some reports putting the figure of civilian deaths at over 1 million since the war began in 2003. While many Iraqis on the ground say they are happy Saddam Hussein's regime is over, there is a concern over how the U.S. government handled the situation.
Everything points to the fact that the occupation resulted in complete disappointment. It particularly concerns Baghdad, which used to be secure and which is an important city both for the Arabs and for the entire world. The war made the Iraqis flee the country in search of security.
Since 2003, war has taken its toll on the capital city of Baghdad. But with recent elections promising a new government, the Obama administration has declared that it is time to pull out.
I think the ultimate success of Iraq is going to depend on the people. Obviously, we're still here in the middle of an election. It's taken a little while to count these votes, but as long as the Iraqi people feel their voices were heard in this latest election, I would consider that a success for us as we continue to draw down.
Here at the forward operating base, Prosperity, we are at the center of Baghdad, right in the heart of it all. But things here are different than they were 7 years ago when the U.S. first became involved in Iraq. In fact, the people here say that their mission is different entirely.
Right now, we're really just transitioning. The Iraqis are in control. Here in the international zone where we are today, they are in charge of the entry control points, the access points that actually come into this place. There's still a little bit of U.S. presence on those ECPs, but we're continuing to draw down as we speak today.
While areas like the international zone in central Baghdad are fortified and secure, there are scattered areas on the outskirts of the city and in the disputed borders between Arab areas and Kurdistan where violence is still prevalent. Because of this, not all Iraqis believe the Americans should leave so quickly.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest tonight is Gunter Deckert, and we've been having a very interesting conversation about the current realities in Germany. I want to turn now to questions about Gunter himself and his activities. I read in Wikipedia, before we get started on that, that as a high school teacher, it said you were fired from your job in 1988 for being an enemy of the German Constitution. And I thought, how can they call you that? And what does that mean? Can you shed any light on that?
Yes, Wikipedia, which is a Jewish-made encyclopedia, is wrong, is lying. I was fired, not being an enemy to the what they call the German Constitution. We haven't got one. We have got a Grundgesetz, our fundamental law, which isn't our Constitution because the German people never had accepted it in a free vote. I was fired because of having been an ex-member of the National Democratic Party in the 80s of the last centuries. So I had very, very good reports of me being a teacher with pupils and parents being in favor of me. And I was fired in the context in the... my troubles began in 1974 when I had been elected president of the National Youth Organization of the NPD. And I had the first story from 74 to 78, and I was acquitted on the reason that the NPD was a legal party. A second trial started in 82, and again I was acquitted, but I was fined to 30,000 Deutschmarks. And the third trial ended with me being fired on the reasoning that I still was in the intellectual and political neighborhood of the NPD. And in 88, the NPD was regarded, not by a court, but by the political authorities, as a party fighting the state, fighting the establishment parties, fighting, let's say, the constitution or the Grundgesetz, which is wrong. I was never tried and judged of being, let's say, a security risk to the Western German state, or I was never accused of being an enemy of the constitution. That is a lie in the Gewitter. I had tried to change that dictation several times, but I wasn't successful.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
All right. Beginning with the trial of Ernst Zündel in Germany, you attended, those trials took place in Mannheim, very close to where you live, and you attended and you wrote reports about it, which were very gratefully received by so many of us all around the world. And when Germar Rudolph's trial took place, you did the same. And you also did the same for Sylvia Stoltz.
Right.
And is this the extent of your trial reports, these three?
Yes, but first, I only wanted to correct the media reports concerning the Zündel trial. And sometime I realized that there were no reports at all, or even false ones. And I would say it was 2 months before the after the Zündel trial started, I wrote my the reports of my own and sent them away inside Germany and to people abroad I knew that they were interested or are interested in what we call revisionism, in the Barnes definition to bring facts together and not only to create myth. You know, Harry Elmer Barnes, I'm a fan of him, I must say. And he was one of the people I read when I was a young student and who influenced me very, very much.
Oh.
And yes.
That's, well, it makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. And the reports, well, I'm not able to, what I call in shorthand writing, and though the reports are, what you may say, every journalist might have written them. The reports I wrote were my impression of what I had lived and realized when inside the courtroom. And I gave even the surroundings, how many policemen, I gave hints as to the nationwide or worldwide media reports, above all in the Zündel trial, and I even added some comments or I gave hints to people interested how to, I gave more details to books mentioned in the trials, to people mentioned in the trials. For example, I presented to some Germans Professor Florisson, as I presented Harry Elmer Barnes and other people, Professor Butz, or Butz is recorded, the American professor of Michigan. And I wanted to present the whole scenery, which is called, or is what is called, revisionism worldwide.
All right, yes, and you did a very good job. And I understand that now you are compiling them into a book. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
And what can you tell us about this book? What is the title, and when will it be available?
First, it was only reports. They had some defects, we call it, or faults. They were very written often after midnight, to be quick and to inform a worldwide public, which came into existence after some weeks of my reporting. And then I was asked by people, well, Ginter, could you do that into a book? Well, I pondered some time and I checked the possibilities, financial ones, technical ones. And, well, when the Stolz trial had finished in last year, I said I can do it, and it cost me a lot of time, and a friend of mine in the Rhineland got the money to get it printed, and it will be printed in a country, European country, which is very friendly to Germany, but I hadn't printed in Germany. One reason are the costs, and the second, you may understand, is what I may call security. I didn't want that the printing fabric is searched by the political police, or that the printing people may be prosecuted. The risk is only mine. And so far, I am very, very optimistic, because everything had been on the internet before. There's nothing new. I didn't add it. Yeah. I didn't add, well, anything that might be regarded as, well, anti-Semitic or things like that. And I called my report kosher. You know, you understand the word kosher. I call it,
no,
even kosher, the Jewish word kosher.
Oh, kosher, know. Yes.
My reports, I myself, they
okay,
are,
so they're cleaned up. They so are, therefore, they don't get you in any legal trouble.
No, so far, no. I said, as long as the trials lasted 4 years, 2005 mm-hmm. up to 2009, and all the reports, well, as I told, were on the internet, and no prosecutions at all, nothing at all. And though I was very optimistic that what I brought is now in a book, must be kosher, even under the strict German laws of today, namely the paragraph 130. And nevertheless, I didn't want that other people got into trouble, and so the risk is only mine. But I'm optimistic that I won't be prosecuted. But nowadays, you never know. That may change from month to month. They get new, and they're new topics with that famous paragraph 130.
How are you going to market the book, and how are people going to be able to buy it? Is it going to be maybe via the internet?
Yes, it's already on the net. That is Sigrams, Frau Zündel, Dr. Ingrid Rimland Zündel has already announced it. It's announced by Global Fire, Nationaljournal. It's mentioned by the way in the Barnes Review. And
I haven't seen it actually advertised as a book.
Yes.
Or heard about it on any of these sources. I saw a letter in the Barnes Review, so I'm missing.
It's not advertised because it's a question of money, but it was mentioned the Barnes, I was told, and it will be mentioned in Rivarol, that's a French weekly, and it will be mentioned everywhere it's possible, and which doesn't cost me a penny. Because I had, it's a question of money. Well, if I got a millionaire, I would be no problems even to pay ads worldwide, but that's not. It's a mouth-to-mouth propaganda. And but for the moment, I'm quite satisfied with the result.
If you can, you send me some kind of an address to buy the book that can be posted on the program page for this program.
The best is to contact me via internet.
Yes. Yes.
My email address. That's the best to do. And if not, it must be shipped to North America, outside Europe. It's the normal price plus €4 postage. It's very, very, it's it's two-thirds of the price of having the book printed. Figure out, not? The postage is very, very expensive in Germany.
Yes. Well, €4, that's kind of expensive. But
yes,
it's not too bad.
With the postage to the States or North America or outside Europe, it's €25.
Well, I'll get all that information from you, and we'll post it.
And it has 304 pages. And
okay, is it just the directly what you had written before in order for you to remain safe? If you don't have any introduction or further commentary by yourself in it.
Yes, sure. That's a preface, which was made by a friend of mine, and which may be important even to foreigners who understand German. I edit the latest development of the paragraph 130 with the death of the NPD lawyer Jürgen Rieger in November last year. What they call the highest constitutional court in Karlsruhe had to work out a judgment going back to Rieger's supply antrag or anything. And I waited till the last minute to get the official press release concerning the latest developments or judicial, let's say, details of the new paragraph 130. For example, they edit another chapter saying that nationalists are not allowed anymore to march or to demonstrate near special historical sites. For example, the Gate of Brandenburg in Berlin. Or let's say, the monument at the Moselle flows into the Rhine. Or let's say, the tomb of Rudolf Hess. Or the tomb of the most German pilot, Rudel. They can, or even now in Dresden, they did a lot of work. Well, these are special, these are delicate historical sites, which shouldn't be, let's say, insulted by nationalists. Strange. For example, yes. Say in America, nationalists are not allowed to demonstrate too much before the White House.
Yes. Yes. Very, very, very strange.
Strange for foreigners to understand, but that is Germany, which isn't a democratic state. It's a kind of oligarchy. That is, a demokratur, which is a combination of democracy, meaning people, of dictatorship, and Goethe is an animal, creeping on a frog-like. And a frog in Germany is a kind of insult.
Okay. Maybe I should clear up. Is this book in English? Are we talking about a version in English that people can buy?
But parts of it may be found still on the internet because a Texan, a friend
yes,
of mine,
James
Stemmon had done well. I thank him very much for the good job he did. And if we find someone who could put all together, there are only some, let's say, pages missing which were not on the internet before. As I told, the new development concerning the paragraph of the Penal Code 130 and some more details they want to report. Well, it could be done in English as well, but it's a question of money, not of time, and not of goodwill. James Stemmon is willing to do the last, let's say, details, but I hope...
Yes, but I thought that you... I had forgotten that. I thought that you had translated the early ones into English yourself because you speak English, but you don't feel that you're...
Yes, well... It was too much, and the first time I did, but then, with the help of Ingrid Rimland-Sündel, I came to know James Stemmon, and as he is married to a Munich woman, his German is very good, and his English is much better than mine is, and though he did all the translation job, and even sometimes in smaller articles for the first reading of all of Childress, I did by my own. If the articles are not too long, I can do them. So everybody, English-speaking people may realize that's not but done by an Englishman, but by a foreigner who tries to write good English or good American.
Yes, he does tremendously well done translations. Well, yeah. So how much, what percentage of the book would you say would be in English and what part not?
most of the typical reports are in English. They're still, I think, James Stemmon still has them on his personal computer. But it's not the whole book. The whole book, contains all the press release, what they call eine Presseschau, a press review. It's not, because I cut out articles of most important German papers, and they are part of the book as well. And there is a list of what they call literature to be read concerning revisionism. The reports are in English, but the reports are not book. They are two-thirds of the book, more or less.
All right. Thank you. There's a great deal of attention on Ernst Zindel right now, and can you say anything about what you see as, or is there anything to say about his prospects?
Yes, I was present
in the United States.
I was present when he was released on the 3rd of March this year,
mm-hmm.
and about we were a bunch of 50 people who were down in a restaurant to say hello to him. We had coffee and supped together. But as the landlord didn't know who we were, there were no political speeches. Not again, Ernst is in a, well, is fine. He has survived everything very, very well. And now is at his parents' house in the Black Forest, the northern part of the Black Forest. And he has to, well, to accustom to life outside. And as he has left Germany as a young boy, as a young lad, well, and he has found a Germany which that has changed. And he must get accustomed to that new life of German people.
Well,
and
yeah.
I will see him, in May or June. I talked to him. I even gave him my book as a present at this meeting. And I will see him, let's say, May, June. I told him, well, if you are established, give me a ring, and I will come with some friends to have a coffee with you.
Do you see any potential for him leaving Germany?
Yes, he can. He has got now what they call a Kennkarte, a personal card, and personal identity card. I don't know if he got a passport to do worldwide, and I even don't know if he has got special restrictions. A prisoner who serves his sentence up to the very last day, as Ernst had done, well, may get special restrictions. For example, no contact with Günter Dickert, for example. No
no contact with who?
Yeah,
with what?
It's possible. Yes. The judge can say, during the next 2 years, 3 years, even up to 5 years, you may not contact Günter Dickert, you may not contact Udo Valenti, you may not go to that special restaurant or bistro or pub or drugstore where you meet national people. As far as I know,
is this a German thing?
Possible.
Because once
that
he's completely finished,
yes.
He's not on probation.
Yeah. We call that Führungsaufsicht. That is a conducted life. You're still controlled. And once, well, as far as I know, he has not got such restrictions which were feared before.
Oh.
But he's under what they call probation. He has to see a special, well, not a judge, at least 4 times a year. And even if he wants to leave, well, let's say, for Berlin for a couple of weeks, he must tell the local police, I leave for Berlin. He must go to Berlin police. I am here now. I will stay. It's, well, it's a kind you are like a dog. A dog leash, or whatever you call this. A dog you've got a lead, or what's in English? A leash?
A leash, yes.
What's the dog?
Yes.
What's the English word? A leash?
Leash. Uh-huh.
Yes. He is at the end of a kind of leash created by the state authorities. That is what they call a guided freedom, controlled freedom, I may call it.
Okay, turning to some final questions here. Do you have a philosophy of political activism? I know this is a big question, but you know, or do you have? What do you see as the most crucial change that needs to take place right now? Where do you think we should be putting our attention, and where are we failing, perhaps, in your estimation?
Well, political philosophy. As a nationalist, there are only certain solutions possible, or certain actions possible. And as a nationalist, well, if you see the nation as the top of as the big house where all Germans live in, that is a kind of what they call solidarity, nationalism, nationalist, being solidarity, togetherness, conservation of our Sitten, what is that? Our customs, preservation of our language, not speaking a kind of Denglish in the scene. I love you, Liebling. Ich liebe dich, Darling. What mixture up between English and German. It's being proud of German history, being proud of that German civilization. You saw some German villages, being proud of our architecture. And as a nationalist, even granting the right to be a nationalist to other people, other ethnic entities. And the best is, if, let's say, if entities live only in one state, there's no fear, no danger, no threat of the civil wars. For example, the Turks and the Greeks on Cyprus. Or let's now say in Palestine, Jews and Arabs. Or in other words, in the Caucasus, well, you've got Armenians, you've got Russians, you've got Persian, things like that. That is still there are what a kind of explosive bombs. And my idea is that as long as we respect the national entity, we respect, let's say, foreigners in their home countries as equal partners, there would be less trouble in the world of ours.
Well, I agree with you. And it seems that you, clearly to these kinds of views, to love your own nation and people and your own history, your national history, to criminalize that or to make that into something harmful to the people is pretty amazing. Who do you see as really responsible for this? Of course, we all know, but at the same time, people see it in different ways.
Well, listen, I would call them the internationalists, those who are in favor of what they call one world, one government, worldwide government, all those people only interested in, let's say, money, and this on the back of the ethnic entities of the people of the national sovereign states. I think that's why we have got friends worldwide, because there's a kind of, the axis of the evil, as the late George Bush called it, the axis of the evil is not a state. It's a thinking, it's a philosophy of those people who control the international financial markets. They don't want strong, independent nation states. They want only consumers. They can manipulate. Then Cain will handle like, well, let's say, in the old Roman state. Panem et circenses. Breath and games, like the Olympics, other games. Now the football games in South Africa, it's only, again, it's not real poverty. They try to realize the aim, let's say, the Bilderberger, the Council of Foreign Relations, all those international institutions are against independent and proud nations.
How far back do you think, where do you put the beginning of this? Of course, you mentioned Rome, but I mean, in our current times.
I think when international capitalism came into existence, and we must choose a name, and at the base of the roots are Jews, and you choose coming from Germany. The Rothschild dynasty goes back to Frankfurt bankers, and Jews coming from the east of Europe. Huh? Isn't it interesting that the Jews of Eastern Europe speak a kind of German, Yiddish, which is a German grammatical structure with a lot of Hebrew words or Jewish words. And this, the grandfather of the Rothschild, sent his sons to the European ports, courts, London, Paris, then Naples was the kingdom of Naples and Sicily, and there they created banks. And you know,
okay. We're going to have
our banks, and nobody has written. I don't care who runs the politics.
Yes. That's I agree with you, Gunter, and we're going to have to stop here. This has been a wonderful conversation with you. You're very articulate, and you don't delay in your answers at all. You're very clear about what you think, and I hope that you will return again. We'll have another good conversation, and thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.